Hello, this is Karma Haji Michaelitis. This presentation introduces and explains the aggregate demand, aggregate supply model. It is coordinated with Chapter 11 of the lecture notes and with Chapter 26 of the textbook. This slide shows the intuitive picture of the markets in the macroeconomy that we have been working with throughout the quarter. We started with the goods and services market and examined factors that affect output. Then we went to the money market and examined factors that affect interest rates. And then we went to the foreign exchange market and examined factors that affect the exchange rate. Then we put all three of the markets together to form the ISLM model with the international linkages. The last step is to add the labor market. We will start out with the labor market and then put all of the markets together. This slide shows the ADAS model that we are going to derive today. On the vertical axis of the graph, there is the price level, say the consumer price index, and on the horizontal axis, the level of real GDP. There are three curves: a downward sloping macroeconomic aggregate demand curve, a vertical long-run supply curve, and an upward sloping short-run supply curve. If we start with the aggregate demand curve, it might remind you of demand curves that you've seen in microeconomics, which are also downward sloping. This relationship, however, is merely superficial. We'll see that the macroeconomic aggregate demand curve depicts a different type of relationship. The macroeconomic aggregate demand curve in the PY diagram is an equilibrium curve in the same manner that the IS and LM curves are equilibrium curves. In this case, the AD curve represents all the combinations of the price level and real GDP Y such that the goods market is in equilibrium, that is, AD equals Y, the money market is in equilibrium, which means money demand equals money supply, and the foreign exchange market is in equilibrium, which means foreign exchange demanded equals foreign exchange supplied. So three models are embodied in this macro, three markets are embodied in this macroeconomic AD curve. Next then, we want to see why the curve is downward sloping. Again, the AD curve represents all the combinations of P and Y such that aggregate demand equals aggregate output, money demand equals money supply, and foreign exchange demanded equals foreign exchange supplied. To explain why the curve is downward sloping, we'll consider a movement from left to right along the AD curve. That is, we'll suppose that the price level falls and explain why it is that the level of output that clears all three markets must rise. So looking at the three equations in the box above the schematics, we see that the price level enters through the money market. So a price level shock is an LM sector shock or a money market shock. Now let's look at the schematics to trace this lower price level through the markets. So we start with the money market. A lower price level increases the real value of the money supply, M over P. So there's an increase in the real money supply. This creates excess supply of money, which makes the interest rate fall. Okay. Now, the next row of the schematics shows how a lower interest rate indirectly affects the foreign exchange market. A lower interest rate means domestic securities are less attractive, and this leads to an increase in capital outflows and a decrease in capital inflows. Now, capital outflows are on the demand side of the foreign exchange market, so foreign exchange demanded rises. And capital inflows are on the supply side of the foreign exchange market, so foreign exchange supplied falls. So demand goes up, supply goes down, which means there will be excess demand for foreign exchange, and the exchange rate rises. The next row of the schematic shows how all the factors come back to affect the goods and services market. So we have a lower price level, remember, that resulted in a lower interest rate. Now, the lower interest rate directly affects consumption and investment, because a lower interest rate means a lower cost of borrowing. So consumption goes up and investment goes up. A lower interest rate, as we've just explained, also means the exchange rate goes up. So it means the dollar price of foreign exchange rises and the foreign exchange price of the dollar falls. This leads to an increase in net exports. So the higher consumption, the higher investment, and the higher net exports lead to a higher level of aggregate demand. So there's excess demand for goods and output rises. So to go back and sum up, we see at the beginning of the schematic a lower P, and at the end of the schematic a higher Y. So a fall in P leads to an increase in the level of output that clears the goods, money, and foreign exchange markets. Having explained why the AD curve is downward sloping, we now turn to the supply side of the economy. We'll examine the production function, the labor market, and the aggregate supply relations. We start by describing production technology. The equation above the graph says that output of GDP depends on inputs of labor, denoted by N, inputs of capital, denoted by K, and by the state of technology. The plus sign under each of these inputs means that output varies positively with each of these inputs. So other things equal, as more labor is used, output goes up. As a higher capital stock is used, output goes up. And as the state of technology improves, output goes up. Now let's look at the graph. On the vertical axis, we have output. On the horizontal axis, we choose to display the inputs of labor. That means that capital and the state of technology are given along any production function. Moving from left to right along the production function shows that as labor is increased, the quantity of output goes up, other things equal. This next graph shows more details about the production function. Notice that as we move from left to right along the production function, the slope gets flatter. Now, the slope of the production function is the marginal product of labor. We see above the graph that the marginal product of labor is defined as the change in output resulting from a change in the input of labor. So moving from left to right along the graph, we see as the input of labor goes up, the slope gets flatter, which means the marginal product of labor falls. The schematic below the graph captures this relationship. As N increases, the labor capital ratio, N over K, goes up, which means there is more and more labor for each unit of capital. And as a result, the marginal product of labor falls. So what this graph depicts is diminishing marginal product of labor. Now, instead of putting output on the vertical axis, we're going to put the marginal product on the vertical axis because that is the variable that we want to emphasize. So in this graph, we have the marginal product of labor on the vertical axis and the quantity of labor on the horizontal axis. The downward sloping curve depicts the diminishing marginal product of labor. Other things equal, as the input of labor goes up, the marginal product of labor falls. So far, we have looked at the characteristics of the production function. Now we want to combine the production technology with the assumption of profit maximization to derive the demand for labor relationship. Now, profit maximization means that firms hire labor up to the point where the real wage equals the marginal product of labor. If we look at the box, on the left-hand side of the equation in the box, we have the money wage over the price level. This is the real wage. It's the real remuneration to labor. In other words, the reward measured in units of output. So profit maximization says the real reward to labor must equal the marginal product of labor. This next slide shows how to derive the demand for labor curve using the profit maximizing condition. On the vertical axis, we measure both the real wage and the marginal product of labor, and on the horizontal axis, the input of labor. Once again, we have our downward sloping marginal product of labor curve. Now let's suppose that the real wage is W over P1. In this case, then, the profit maximizing point is at point A. So when the real wage is W over P1, profit maximizing firms will want to hire N1 units of labor. Now let's consider a different real wage, say a lower one, W over P2. Okay. When the real wage falls to W over P2, then N1 will no longer be a profit maximizing amount of labor. The reason is, if firms were to hire N1 units of labor, the marginal product of labor would still be shown at point A, but the real wage now is shown by point C. So it says the marginal product of labor is now greater than the real wage, which means that firms will want to hire more labor until the marginal product equals the real wage, which is at point B. So if the real wage is W over P2, then the profit maximizing amount of labor is N2. This next slide shows the demand for labor curve. What we have done is to rename the marginal product curve as the demand for labor curve because profit maximizing firms hire labor up to the point where the real wage equals the marginal product. Now in this graph, we've got the real wage on the vertical axis and the quantity of labor on the horizontal axis. So considering moving from left to right along this graph, other things equal, as the real wage falls, profit maximizing firms will want to hire more labor. Note that the capital stock and the state of technology are given along this curve. In this slide, we move from labor demand to labor supply. So on the vertical axis, we've got the real wage, and on the horizontal axis, the quantity of labor. The upward sloping curve in this case shows that other things equal, as the real wage goes up, households will want to supply more labor. Now, in this case, there is an assumption that the substitution effect of a higher real wage outweighs the income effect, as explained in the lecture notes. This slide shows equilibrium in the labor market. Equilibrium in the labor market, in this case, is at point E, where the demand for labor equals the supply of labor. At the real wage W over P1, there is no involuntary unemployment. Everyone willing to work at this going real wage can find a job. We call the corresponding equilibrium amount of employment the full employment level of employment, which is a mouthful. In this slide, we go from the labor market to the production function, from the full employment level of employment to the full employment supply of output. Let's start in the upper panel of the graph. The equilibrium is at point E. The real wage is W over P1, and the full employment level of employment is that labeled NFE1. Now we come down to the production function in the lower graph, and we plug in the full employment level of employment, and we find the corresponding level of output. We see that as point E on the production function, and on the vertical axis, we label the level of output at this point is YFE1, the full employment level of output. Now we show the full employment level of output in a graph where we've got the price level on the vertical axis and output on the horizontal axis. The long-run aggregate supply curve is vertical at the full employment level. What this means is No matter how high the price level, output can't increase because firms are producing at capacity. Note that the capital stock and the state of technology are given along this curve. So far, we have derived the long-run supply curve, but there also is a short-run supply curve. In fact, there's a whole family of short-run supply curves that go with each long-run supply curve. So now we want to introduce and derive those curves. And to do that, we go back to our profit-maximizing rule for hiring labor. Remember that profit maximization by firms means that they hire labor up to the point where the real wage equals the marginal product of labor. That's the equation in the first box, equation number one. Now, if we rearrange this equation, we will get the rule for supplying output that says profit maximizing firms supply output up to the point where price equals marginal cost. In other words, if we rearrange equation one, we end up with equation four, with price on the left-hand side of the equation and the money wage over the marginal product on the right-hand side. Now, the money wage over the marginal product is the marginal cost of producing output, as explained in more detail in the lecture notes. So let's go back up to equation two. We said profit maximization means that firms supply output up to the point where price equals marginal cost, and that the marginal cost is equal to the money wage over the marginal product. So profit maximization gives us then equation number four. Now what we want to do is to graph this equation and derive the short-run supply curve. As we do that, we want to keep in mind the diminishing marginal product of labor. So the last equation here on this slide, we have the marginal product of labor is a function of inputs of labor, inputs of capital, input of technology. Given capital and given the state of technology, as n rises, the marginal product of labor falls. That's why there's a minus sign under n in the marginal product function. This next slide shows the marginal cost graph. So on the vertical axis, we measure the marginal cost, and on the horizontal axis, real output or real GDP. The upward sloping curve means other things equal, as y goes up, the marginal cost rises. Now notice that the money wage, the capital stock, and the state of technology are all given along this curve. So why is the curve upward sloping? Well, to produce more output, firms have to hire more labor. So that means as the move from left to right along this graph, n rises. But we know that as n goes up, other things equal, the marginal product of labor falls. We also know that marginal cost is equal to the money wage over the marginal product of labor. So n goes up, marginal product falls, the marginal cost rises. So the marginal cost curve is upward sloping. This next slide shows how we go from the marginal cost curve to the short-run supply curve using the profit-maximizing condition that firms supply output up to the point where price equals marginal cost. So let's start in the left panel. And suppose that the price is P1. With the price of P1, the profit maximizing point is at point A. Profit maximizing firms will want to produce Y1 units of output because at point A, price equals marginal cost. On the other hand, if the price rises to P2, then profit maximizing firms will want to produce more output, as shown by point B. So what we see is that the profit maximizing points lie on the marginal cost curve. The right-hand diagram now shows the short-run aggregate supply curve. It is the marginal cost curve renamed is the short-run aggregate supply curve because, as we just said, the locus of all points for which price equals marginal cost lie on the marginal cost curve. So in the right-hand panel, we have the price level on the vertical axis, real GDP on the horizontal axis, and an upward-sloping short-run supply curve. Note that the money wage, the capital stock, and the state of technology are all given along this curve. And if any one of these factors change, then the short-run supply curve will shift. This next slide shows a shift of the short-run supply curve going back to a shift of the marginal cost curve. So let's start in the left-hand panel. We've got the marginal cost and the price level on the vertical axis and output on the horizontal axis. The first marginal cost curve is that labeled marginal cost W1. Now, if the money wage were to rise to W2, then the marginal cost curve shifts upward. The marginal cost in any level of output is now higher with a higher money wage. So now we want to see what happens to the locus of profit maximizing points. So let's go back to the initial price, P1. When the money wage was W1, the profit maximizing point was at point A. But now, with a higher money wage, we see that price will equal marginal cost at a lower level of output at point C. The same is true when the price level is higher, say P2. With the initial money wage of W1, the profit maximizing point is at point B. But then, when the money wage rises to W2, point B is no longer a profit maximizing point. With a higher money wage, profit maximizing firms will want to supply less output, as shown by point D. We transfer this information over into the right-hand panel of the graph with the marginal cost curves renamed as the short-run supply curves. So what we see is there's a whole family of short-run supply curves, one for each different money wage. Here we've shown only two. And that as the money wage increases, the short-run aggregate supply curve shifts up and to the left. This next graph then shows the two different types of supply curves that we have introduced and explained in this presentation, the upward sloping short-run supply curve and the vertical long-run supply curve. So associated with each vertical long-run supply curve is a whole family of short-run supply curves. And finally, we end up with the graph with which we started. We've got the price level on the vertical axis, output on the horizontal axis, and a downward sloping aggregate demand curve, a vertical long-run supply curve, and an upward-sloping short-run supply curve. In this graph, the equilibrium is at point E. It is at the intersection of the aggregate demand curve, and not only the short-run supply curve, but also the long-run supply curve. So this graph depicts a full equilibrium, all of the markets in the model clear. Remember, being on the AD curve means that the goods market clears, the money market clears, and the foreign exchange market clears. And being on the long-run supply curve means that the labor market clears. Labor demand equals labor supply. So this graph shows a full equilibrium. The purpose of this presentation has been to introduce and explain the AD-AS model. Now, in class and in the readings, we'll bring this model to life by examining demand-side shocks and supply-side shocks and looking at how we can interpret current issues in terms of this model.